The Storm Child by Rita Bradshaw. Read by Colleen Prendergast. The Storm Child. The Storm Child came at the break of dawn and eased my aching heart. Speaking words of love and hope, she soothed my troubled soul. Arms outstretched, she beckoned me to the promise yet to come, a time when joy and strength would flow and peace and faith be mine. I believed the Storm Child that winter's morn. I believed the day would come when tears and grief would be no more and light would flood my world. She left me then, her purpose done, although I begged her stay, that ethereal child from another time beyond life's mortal plane. But still I think of her sweet smile, of her beauty and her grace, and long to see her once again, my child, my love, my life. Anonymous. Part 1. The Arrival, 1921. Chapter 1. Sophia Maliana lifted her head to look up into the whirling snowflakes and knew she couldn't go on. She had long since lost all feeling in her frozen feet, and now she was falling as much as she was walking. The blizzard had taken the last ounce of her strength, and she couldn't fight it any longer. She'd just toppled headlong into a drift at the side of the lonely country lane she had been following since daybreak, and it was now twilight, the snowstorm that had gathered pace since mid-morning showing no sign of easing. Drawing her knees as far towards her chest as her swollen stomach permitted, she put her arms round them and closed her eyes. She had to rest. The sides of the 5-foot drift had fallen in on her to some extent, and with visibility practically non-existent, the keenest pair of eyes wouldn't have noticed the snow-covered mound. Too weak and spent to resist the deep blanket of exhaustion, she fell into semi-consciousness, vaguely aware of the wind howling and the snow falling, but too numb in mind and body to move. She was comfortable, and for the first time in days she didn't feel chilled to the bone. Strange, that. Released from the necessity of willing her body to take the next step and the next, her mind floated back to the night of the party at the big house. They had all been so excited, the rest of the staff and her, for it wasn't every day the son and heir got engaged. The preparations for the celebrations had begun weeks before. The huge 15-bedroomed country residence of the Right Honourable Charles Richmond and his lady wife and their two sons having been cleaned from top to bottom, with new curtains and carpets throughout downstairs, although, as the 16-strong indoor staff had agreed amongst themselves, it hadn't been necessary. The enormous hall at the back of the house, which overlooked the manicured gardens, had been cleared of its furniture so the dancing could take place in there, and in the drawing room and dining room everything had been rearranged to allow the guests to eat and drink from the tables lining the walls. Hothouse flowers from Mr. Weatherburn's glasshouses in the grounds had been displayed in magnificent arrangements, perfuming the air, and although Mr. Weatherburn, the chief gardener, had mourned the stripping of his precious blooms en masse, the result had been breathtaking. She had been happy that night, tired because she and the other upstairs housemaid had been commandeered to join the three downstairs ones, who, along with the footman, had been kept busy scurrying here and there, seeing to the guests, under the watchful eyes of the butler and housekeeper. But it had been worth it to see the beautiful dresses and glittering jewellery of the female guests, and the men in all their finery. The house had been filled with music and light and gaiety, and had taken on a fairy tale magic. It had been well after 2 o'clock in the morning when the party finished and the guests dispersed, those who were staying overnight disappearing upstairs to their suites, and the rest taking their leave in the multitude of motor cars and carriages outside. Almost immediately, the long row of bells in the kitchen had started tinkling as the guests demanded attention. Hot water for the hip baths in each suite, refills for the stone hot water bottles, which had been placed in beds earlier that evening, hot chocolate for the ladies and brandy for the men, and so on. The Richmonds were unusually considerate employers and rarely called on their staff after dinner in the evenings, apart from Lord Richmond's valet and his wife's lady's maid. But that night the footman and the maids were sent hurrying hither and thither. She had been sent to a suite at the end of a long corridor in the West Wing with a tray holding a cup of hot chocolate, dainty iced biscuits, and a glass